I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Always the biggest and best in sports at Yahoo Sports Radio and the Big E Sports Show. And indeed, we have got you covered over the next 2 hours. And although the 2014 NFL Draft is now in the rearview mirror, we will continue to take a look back and break down some of the selections. We've invited back from CBS Sports one of Big E's favorites and very anxious to get his read, his reaction on how things played out and his thoughts on this year's draft class. What a pleasure to welcome in the Quicken Loans Studios, Brian Jones from CBS Sports. He is an NFL and CBS college football analyst. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing well, Big E. I should temper that somewhat. Not so well after seeing not one single Longhorn go in the NFL draft, something that hadn't happened since 1937. What an embarrassment that was.
Yeah, I was going to say that was my leadoff question because the Big 12 Conference really took a severe decline in this year's draft. As you had just said, 17 players drafted overall, but you're an alum of the Longhorns. How difficult was that for you to digest that, as you said, I mean, not having a player drafted the first time since 1937?
Yeah, it was extremely difficult to digest. I thought Jackson Jeff Colt,
yes,
would at least get drafted. He was a Big 12 defensive player of the year. He led the team in tackles, sacks, tackles for loss, which is you expect him to lead in those last two categories, being a defensive end, but to lead him in tackles from a defensive end position, that was that's a huge feather, you know, in his hat to do that at that position. So I was very disappointed and shocked that not one Longhorn was drafted. You look at all these recruiting statements that are made each and every year. Hey, there's another top 10 class, and your team's always bragging about that, and yet they don't develop into players that the next level would want. And I'm mindful of the fact, Big E, that, one, hey, not everyone that comes to college with a lot of fanfare is going to that's not going to translate into someone being an NFL draft pick, but you would think a school of Texas stature and the type of athletes they are supposedly bringing on campus that you'd have at least one, just one, we'll take that is looked upon in favor at the next level. But that didn't happen, so it is what it is. They have to move on, and I think the program is definitely heading in the right direction with Coach Charlie Strong, but definitely an embarrassment and an indictment on the past regime. One more kick at them, I guess, if you will, by none of their players being drafted.
NFL college football analyst with CBS Sports, Brian Jones, is joining us on this Friday night at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Connect with us online at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. A number of discussion points that you've just hit on. You know, I want to get into how did this happen in terms of with the Big 12, but let's back up for a moment. Talking about defensive end Jackson Jeffcoat, why was he deemed undraftable? I mean, you were talking about he was the co-defensive player of the year in the Big 12 Conference. How in the world does he go undrafted?
Yeah, I'm surprised. You look at his history there on campus. Yeah, he's been dinged up a number of times, and he's a kind of a tweener. He's played with his hand in the dirt. He's probably going to have to play with it up, play standing up, I should say, in a two-point stance instead of a three-point stance,
right,
in the NFL. And I guess they looked at him as a tweener, a guy with an injury history, and so maybe that was the knock on him. But I think once he gets into camp, people will find out that this young man is a tremendous football player. You look at his pedigree, his father played a long, long time in the NFL, Jim Jeffcoat, the Dallas Cowboys. And if he can stay healthy, I think he's going to be a steal.
Okay, so let me recap for all of our listeners tuning in. 17 players drafted out of the Big 12 Conference, and of course, a complete shutout for the University of Texas. No players drafted. That was the first time since 37. So let's go back to Brian. How in the world does this happen, and what do you think, what was the cause of this in terms of it? Do you think it could be perhaps the impact of conference realignment?
Well, I look at the Big 12, and you know, they're top to bottom. Are they a top tier conference? No, you've got some laggards there at the bottom half. But Oklahoma, they showed that I think they're forced to be reckoned with. They're in the top 10. It seems like each and every year they knock off Alabama in the Sugar Bowl in a pretty convincing fashion. You know, I expected players to be drafted from there, and they were. And Aaron Colvin, if he's not injured, you know, and here in the offseason, he's probably going to be a number one pick. He's an excellent corner, one of the best in the nation. TCU always, they put some top talent on the football field.
Sure.
They had a few guys drafted. Barrett, that cornerback, a lot of people were talking about him heading into the season a year ago. And he proved that he was worthy of being drafted and drafted pretty high in the NFL. So there's talent to be had. But I just think from top to bottom, you look at the conference, it's not where it would like to be. You know, right now it's still the SEC, which is king. And then I would say the Pac-12 is nipping on the SEC's heels. The Pac-12, you know, other than a Washington State and maybe a Utah who really had a bad season a year ago, it's a pretty competitive conference top to bottom as well, then throw in the Big Ten. So the Big 12 has a little ways to go to get back up there, but Oklahoma, like I said, they're always, as much as it hurts me to say it, Big E, they're always in the mix and always have a ton of talent, and their guys actually are living up to those highly recruited classes, and they're being developed, and that's been the knock on my alma mater, Texas, that these kids come in, a lot of fanfare, very heralded, but they're not being developed, and so that's going to change. It's changing as we speak, and I think you just have to look from top to bottom. The Big 12, not one of the premier conferences right now. I would say they're probably, you know, four or five.
You know, Brian, we're three seasons removed from former members, Nebraska, Colorado, Missouri, Texas A&M. The fact that the Big 12 Conference, it's a 10-member league, they're going to have fewer scholarship players. Are you surprised that they have not expanded?
I am a little surprised that they haven't. I've always maintained, especially in this age of conference championship ball games, if one conference is going to have it, every conference should employ the same model. I just think it's unfair. You don't have a conference title game, even though you're playing an extra conference game during the season. I just think we need to be a little bit more uniform in every conference-wide, and not have some with a conference game, others without, especially as we embark on this new playoff system, which I hope grows. I'm ready for bracket creep already. I don't think four teams is nearly enough. And so they're going to have to figure it out. You know, the conference, I'm sure they've investigated and contemplated bringing maybe one or two other institutions into the fold, and it just hasn't happened now. But I think the plate tectonics of college football will continue to shift, especially as we get this playoff rolling.
Okay, we're going to take our first commercial break. We're being joined with Brian Jones from CBS Sports and much more straight ahead at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Okay, we are back at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We love having you along on this Friday night. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports, as we continue with our conversation with Brian Jones from CBS Sports. We're talking about the Big 12 Conference. Hey, they're supposed to be a power conference. I wanted you to weigh in on, Brian, I'm not sure if you heard LSU's head coach Les Miles, his comments this past week that he said that his school, they are fortunate to have players drafted in the NFL, unlike some universities in Texas. Your thoughts?
You got to love Les. I love it. And I'm sure that was all said. It's fun, but people are going to take digs at you. You're supposed to be the University of Texas. You're an iconic program. You've got a long, successful history. And it is embarrassing, as I said earlier. And so I'm not surprised that Les Miles and other folks, when they take shots at our university, you know, we prop ourselves up, at least the previous regime, and, you know, act like you know, we were much better than we actually were, especially on the field. And so people are going to take shots, not surprised. And you know, like that jackass in a hailstorm, we're just going to have to hunker down and take it until this new regime can turn the football program around.
Okay, so let's talk about the leadership of head coach Charlie Strong. Three first-rounders from Louisville. I mean, that certainly is a testament to his ability not only to develop talent, but to hopefully get this program steered in the right direction.
Yeah, how about that? The guy had three first rounders, as you mentioned, a number of other players drafted off of that football team as well. And when what I'm hearing, Big E, I'm loving. And I was actually down in Austin for our Longhorn Letterman's weekend last month and got to meet Coach Strong and some of the staff and just talking to the staff and talking to some parents of players on that football team. They have ratcheted up the intensity there. Are they going to win a national championship? As Coach Strong said, no, we're not next season. Don't even think we are. But they're going to be a much more physical football team. They're going to have an identity, and that's something they have not had. I've maintained for a long time that Texas, no one could tell me what their core philosophy was. Well, we know what the core philosophy is going to be for Charlie Strong and this new brand of Longhorn football, and that's being mentally and physically tough, paying attention to detail, and that's going to be their foundation. So it's heading in the right direction. Coach Strong and some of the staff just ended a little 14-15 city tour throughout Texas, and I thought that was a great idea for him to familiarize himself as well as the fans to familiarize themselves with the new head coach. So it's going in the right direction. So we got a foundation. We've got a core philosophy. That's what you have to start with.
You know, Brian, we focus on the University of Texas, the new leadership of head coach Charlie Strong, and how he looks to reverse the fortunes. But overall, Texas high schools, I mean, they have a very strong reputation with a talent pool, a feeder into the Big 12 Conference. And now so many of these premier players are heading out of state. What needs to change in terms of that?
Well, that's always going to happen. And Texas is going to get its fair share. It already has. You look at the recruits that are committed thus far for next signing day in February. We got some pretty good names on there, so they're going to come. And Texas will always get its fair share because, yes, it is the University of Texas. And there's so much talent in the state of Texas. You look at this draft. We talked on my radio show the other night about 50% of the guys drafted in the NFL draft came from five states: Texas, Florida, California, Ohio, and Georgia. So Texas has plenty of athletes to share. You just want to make sure you get the best ones as possible, being mindful that you're not going to always get the top guys, but you get enough of them, and you'll be fine if you coach them up and develop them. So it's always been like that. You look at your alma mater. Mm-hmm. I mean, the majority of that roster, where are they from? They're from Texas. So we've always had enough to share, and that will continue because it is a great high school system in the state of Texas. It's a very competitive system, and again, it continues to grow. I understand they may be going to a 6A level.
Brian Jones with us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show from CBS Sports, the NFL college football analyst. And Brian, where can our listeners across the country, where can they connect with you?
Television, as far as that, I'm done until August when we start our preview shows on CBS and get ready for the SEC on CBS. And I'm also, in addition to being on CBS, I'm on CBS Sports Network.
It's probably nice to exhale just a little bit, isn't it, Brian?
Oh, it is great. Trust me. These crazy fans we have to deal with, you got these SEC nuts who think if you don't pick their team on a particular week, you're hating on them. It's amazing. And I just laugh at some of these folks. And I have plenty of friends that you have played at SEC schools, and they've never given me any grief. It's only the knuckleheads who've never donned a uniform that give you the grief.
Well, the dominance of the SEC, 8 years in a row with the most draftees with 49, and you were just giving us your evaluation of why the SEC continues to stride out and delivers the most first-rounders. But I want to talk about the trend in terms of the priority of players. 19 players selected in the first round this year were defensive players, and we're seeing more and more of that. That's the third consecutive year where we're seeing a double-digit defensive players going in that first round.
Yeah, and you've got to be able to put pressure on these quarterbacks. And yes, it's a passing league, but I still think that's a misnomer because you look at the last two Super Bowl winners, they had dang good running games. That was Baltimore with Ray Rice, and also this past season, Marshawn Lynch with Seattle. And so that's going to be a big key still, is running the ball. But, yeah, you've got to have some guys who can stop the run, guys who can play in space, because you see these more wide-open offenses. And then the defense, you know, it's a nice trend that's going on, interesting dynamic, where the college game is pretty much dictating to the pro game now. And it's usually the other way around. But you've got such dynamite athletes, and they're playing and concentrating on their sport year-round, unlike when I was growing up, where we went from sport to sport and didn't just really concentrate on one sport like mm-hmm. they do now. And so these guys are so athletic, and they're playing against the Oregons, if you will. You know, Oklahoma likes to spread you out and chunk it around, although they still like a balanced offense. So these defensive guys are becoming a premium, especially at the outside linebacker and those rush ends, so they can put pressure on these quarterbacks. So I think that's a trend that's going to continue.
NFL college football analyst with CBS Sports, Brian Jones, is along with us at YSR. Of course, he himself was a standout in the NFL and at the University of Texas. But right now, let's talk about some offense and the selection of Johnny Manziel. Obviously, I thought the Cleveland Browns did a very good job of maneuvering up and down the draft. I mean, they acquired three top-tier talents.
Yeah, you know, you look at Oklahoma State and then Justin Gilbert, the corner they got
in the
first round. And Justin's just an exciting, outstanding cornerback. And he had 7 picks on the season 2. He returned for touchdowns. That young man should be a pretty good fit there on the opposite side of Joe Hayden, who just received a big contract from the Browns. But I've always been a big fan of Manziel's. It hurts me to say that as a Longhorn, but your game has to recognize game, and the guy is just a phenomenal player, and I hate it listening to all this trash talk about the young man and his work ethic. He proved everyone wrong a year ago in the midst of all the controversy about autograph gate. He proved them wrong by going out and posting better numbers than he did 2 seasons ago. So he pays attention to his craft. He has the work ethic you want, and I think he's going to bring a tremendous swagger to that football team. He's going to have to come in like all rookies do and learn the NFL way, and there's going to be a learning curve, but I think he's going to be a good fit for them.
Well, and certainly a lot of curiosity of when Johnny will start. Well, we're flat out of time, Brian. We sincerely appreciate you joining us on a Friday night. I send our best to Gladys, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Okay, thanks, Bri.
All right, Big E, you got it. Thank you.
You bet. Much more straight ahead this weekend at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter, at @eRadioSports, and we will be right back. Okay, it is time to completely shift gears as we are back inside the Quicken Loans studios at YSR on this Memorial Day weekend, and we did want to take time to commemorate and honor all men and women who have died or been seriously injured in military services for our country. And that's why in our next segment, we have invited back to our show. He is one of the Big E's favorites, Brian Cuban. He is a best-selling author, activist, and an attorney. He is also the executive director for his big brother, Mark Cuban's foundation, the Fallen Patriot Fund, that was established to provide support to spouses and children of U.S. military personnel who were killed or seriously injured in Operation Iraqi Freedom. Thank you so much for joining us on this Friday night. How are you, Brian?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we've got a lot of ground to cover. And, of course, Mark is best known as owner of the Dallas Mavericks and his hit television series Shark Tank. But he certainly made some very big headlines this past week with some bold statements. And I'd love, just right off the top, would you mind weighing in on the interview? And what was your immediate reaction and some perspective?
I listened to the interview, and it was clear to me that he wasn't speaking in the first person. He was speaking in objective first-person-based examples. So I thought it was ridiculous for a journalist to take, you know, to parse it and come up with a, you know, conclusion that Mark is racist. It's ridiculous.
Right.
He wasn't using I from what I took in the I do this. He was giving examples. And if you listen to what he said right after that, he said, look, like there are countless other examples. It makes it clear that that's what he was doing.
Absolutely. You know, and you just step back and really think about what Mark is saying, that we all have preconceived notions. And none of us, as he said, you know, none of us have pure thoughts. We all live in glass houses. And so just quickly before we transition here, I mean, what do you believe is the first step in terms of overcoming bigotry and overcoming racism?
Being self-aware, just like Mark said. You got to be self-aware of these issues and willing to have a conversation. We all have stereotypes based on our environment, how we were raised, how we grew up, and the issue is recognizing that and being willing to, you know, constantly self-evaluate yourself on your beliefs.
Absolutely. Hey, Brian Cuban is with us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. So we also have to mention, let's move ahead here. Mark is a very big supporter of veterans and their families, founded the Fallen Patriot Fund. When was that founded? And tell us a little bit about that, Brian.
The Fallen Patriot Fund was founded in 2003, right after the start of the Iraqi conflict. Mark, at that time, wanted to do something for the soldiers and their families who were going away to war and coming back either injured or families of KIA and who need immediate financial help to get resettled back into the real world, you know, back into life. You know, people, you know, losing their homes, can't pay their mortgage, can't pay their rent. So Mark wanted to offer a user-friendly way to allow people to pay their bills.
You know, and Brian, I'd love for you to just share perhaps what is some of the feedback from some of the families that you guys have been able to help out? Because when a loss does occur, I mean, what was a two-person income becomes a one, and there's that financial hardship there placed on those families, and that is very difficult to deal with because they're still very devastated.
Absolutely, and I mean, now it's going on, we're in 2014, and
right.
The fund's been going on its 11th year, and we've given out over $5 million. To countless soldiers and families of soldiers. And obviously, there's always gratitude. We make it very user-friendly. There is as little red tape as there can be. Fill out an application, fulfill a few requirements, basic requirements, and tell us why you need the money. We don't require bills, you know, except in very unusual circumstances. We might require some documentation, but usually it's boom, boom, boom.
And Mark, of course, is very philanthropic throughout the years. He's reached out to a number of organizations and provided a helping hand. I was looking through disaster relief, of course, education, you know, raising money for the Dallas Khan Academy. But he's always been a big supporter of veterans and their families and supporting fallen heroes. Can you tell us why?
I mean, obviously, you know, he wants to support those who are putting their lives on the line and those who have made the ultimate sacrifice in serving our country. I mean, you know, I think we all want to, you know, support our military in that way. And Mark had the financial means to do so. He put $1 million of his own money into this to start it off.
And tell all of our listeners where they can go, perhaps this Memorial Day weekend, where they can go and find out more information and also to donate. Because you guys have teamed up with Bank of America.
We did at the beginning. I'm not sure, honestly not sure how involved. At the beginning, they were matching donations. I would have to check on what the status of that is now. But I also want to bring up that there are no administrative costs taken out of the grants.
Mm-hmm.
Mark funds all administrative costs out of his pocket. 100% of every dollar goes to the injured soldier. I want to make sure people know that there are no administrative costs taken out of any dollar that's donated.
Okay, Brian Cuban is with us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. He is the executive director of the Mark Cuban Foundation, the Fallen Patriot Fund. We wanted to pay tribute to that and recognize that on this Memorial Day weekend. And how much, just over the years, how much money has been raised?
Millions of dollars. And, you know, at this point, because the Iraqi conflict is winding down,
right.
You know, the donations aren't as many. Well, it's wound down. the donations aren't as much, but the claims still come in because post-traumatic stress disorder is terrible, and it is affecting a lot of our veterans, and we get a lot of claims related to post-traumatic stress disorder. And the good thing about the fund is we don't limit it to one-time grant. You can come back for a maximum of 3 times if you're still having problems. And you can go back, you can go to www.fallenpatriotfund.org, print off an application, just attach the very simple documents we require. We require a DD-214. We require a VA rating, a minimum 70% overall disability. And we've in a statement of why you need the money. That's it.
Okay, Brian. We look forward to catching up with you again real soon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Alyssa. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Much more straight ahead at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Stay close. Okay, we are so glad you're with us on this Friday night at Yahoo Sports Radio. And right now, it is time to pack our bags. We're going to head to Milwaukee and visit with one of our good friends at Fox 6 Television, and that is Mr. Tommy Pippins, as we have got a number of subjects to discuss. And it is hard to believe the 2014 NBA draft. It is just around the corner, and certainly a ton of chatter this past week. How about those Cleveland Cavaliers landing the second year in a row, the number one pick? But you have got to be very excited excited if you are a Milwaukee Buck fan, because let's just say they did just fine in that number two slot, because historically it has yielded some really great NBA players throughout the year. So it's such a pleasure to have with us from Fox 6, the sports director, Tom Pippins. How are you?
I'm doing great, pal. I wish I was half as popular as you, and I know your listeners know that, so I'm always delighted my ratings go up when we're together. And I wish I was maybe a quarter as popular as Mallory Eaton.
Amen.
The 18-year-old daughter of, as you're well aware, new Bucks co-owner Wes Eaton. She was out there at the NBA draft lottery. Biggie, she went from, I think, 250 followers or so to almost over 42,000 as of late yesterday afternoon and counting.
Well,
made quite an impression.
She really did, a darling young girl, and just became overnight an internet sensation.
Exactly.
Makes me think about what it was like to be 18 years old again, right?
Oh, I'm telling you. I know you look just that pretty and still do.
Oh, I don't know about
that. I'm going to digress and say that. But, you know, I agree with you. Number two, I mean, you think of Kevin Durant, maybe the best of the bunch. I mean, Michael Jordan back in the day went three. It's very difficult at times on that number one pick, as GM John Hammond was saying yesterday in his news conference, because there's so many expectations. And if that young man doesn't perform right away, it could spiral downward. So there is no franchise player. And speaking of Cleveland, maybe they're posturing to get LeBron James back to the Cavaliers, and that's why they won the darn thing for the third time in 4 years. Even Hammond said, jeepers, they're in our division, though, yet. You'd think you'd tweak it a little bit. And I think there has been talk of the weighted ping pong balls at least being altered to some degree. But I think in a draft where you have several players who could be all-star players and game changers, not necessarily franchise changers a la LeBron James, the Bucks are sitting pretty, and they're calling it a new day. They've got some young people you're aware of we can build around, or they can build around, and so I think there's a lot of encouragement going forward. The biggest thing is they somehow have to find a way to buy a new facility to keep the Bucks here, because the NBA can still buy back the franchise if the Bucks don't get the thing built within a couple of years as stipulated in the contract. So there's a little doubt that way, but there's a lot of excitement as it relates to June 26th with a big NBA draft.
Well, Fox 6 Television sports director Tom Pippins is joining us on this Friday night at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And Tommy, you're exactly right. The NBA draft will take place Thursday, June 26th, held at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. And so my heart really, as I reflect on this past season, my heart really does go out to the Milwaukee Bucks, because it was absolutely brutal, and your fans, they really need some sense of hope, something to look forward to after suffering through the worst season in the franchise history. They were absolutely dead last in the NBA standings.
Absolutely, 17 wins, and for the Bucks to be relevant again, they really do have to build through the draft. And this is what Hammond mentioned. If you go back to when the Bucks made the Eastern Conference Finals and came to within maybe a Big Dog Robinson baseline jump shot in game six at Philly of going to the championship round, they had a first round draft pick. They had a number one overall in Glenn Robinson. They had a number five in Ray Allen. When they were last relevant and made a nice move in 08 with Brandon Jennings and Andrew Bogut, they had Bogut, who was a number one overall pick. And so they're convinced they have to build through the draft. They have Giannis, the young Greek man, who I think has a great ceiling. They have Brandon Knight. They have John Henson. So if they can get another part to put in there, I really think they can start to go in the right direction again. But I have to come back to this. They have to build a new facility. Otherwise, the owners would make a $25,000 profit, or is it 25, maybe even $25 million, to sell the team back to the NBA. And that's not what you want. The leaders in our great community have to step forward and be more progressive than we've been in the past. If you go way back to when Herb Cole bought the team and saved it, there was a gift given by the Pettits of the Bradley Center, and we took so long to decide where it was going to be in the mid-'80s that they thought seriously of pulling back that gift. So if we want to be an NBA city, we're going to have to step up, and I'd like to think our leaders are working behind the scenes to make it happen for Messrs. Edens and Lazar, because if you think about it, it's only about $12 a year for all of us to keep it here, and yet there are many people, and you respect where they're coming from. I don't want to put money into millionaires and billionaires in this case, pockets. But the bottom line is this. It's much more than just Bucks. I mean, you've got so many events that can go there year-round, 41 events, 41 NBA games, and then the postseason for the Bucks. But there are many, and there are jobs to be had in building the facility and the economy and players paying taxes to come in here and play. So I really hope, I know I'm on my sandbox here, whatever you want to call it, I really hope that we'll step up and keep the Bucks here. And I think that they will.
Well, the Milwaukee Bucks, they definitely, as you said, they have major issues to address. You're talking about the new facility. They certainly have some hope now, at least a glimmer of it, that the Bucks have the number two pick in the draft lottery. But I want you to talk to us a little bit about the new Bucks owner in Wesley Edens and his leadership. Are you optimistic that he will be able to get the Bucks headed in the right direction?
You know, I really think so. I've got to think they have a plan. Now, as we speak, they are allowing Mr. Hammond and his staff, including head coach Larry Drew, and as you point out, they really had no chance. There were so many injuries last year. The team was decimated from the first day of practice. I mean, from October on, they weren't the team they envisioned when they were hoping to make a playoff run, which was the edict of former owner Cole, who really wanted to make postseason every year in some fashion, be it eighth seed, be it seventh. But I think Edens and Mark Lazary, billionaire hedge fund people, they've got a plan. Whether or not they're going to allow Mr. Hammond and his staff to go forward or just say through the draft because they've only owned the team a few days as we speak, I really believe that these folks are very progressive. They really want to make a splash, and I'm going to be very, very surprised if they don't. And I also think that they're wise enough to know that they have to make good basketball decisions. I happen to be a fellow who respects John Hammond, respects Larry Drew. I'd like to see him get another chance. I don't necessarily think they're going to clean house, but it would be their prerogative to do so. But I think with this young blood, just as to make the analogy, we had the great baseball commissioner Bud Selig as the owner for years and years. Mm-hmm. The landscape of the game changed, and then you had to move on to someone who had deeper pockets, progressive thinking in Mark Attanasio. And ironically, some people are talking about the current Brewers owner, someone who could be commissioner. I think that if we can get to a stage where these owners are giving the basketball people an opportunity to do what they do best, to make the picks, to guide the team, I think that the Bucks will go forward. I think they'll be relevant again. I think people are really excited about two young fellas who have a lot of juice, have never failed in business, and they plan to be successful once again with this venture known as the Milwaukee Bucks.
Okay, we are hooping it up with Tom Pippins, the Fox 6 television sports director at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, and you were talking about the head coach, Larry Drew, but what about O.J. Mayo? There's been some rumors that perhaps the Bucks may be interested in trading him, and I know that Buck fans, they had to be very optimistic that he would come in offensively and really be a difference maker, but his stock dropped substantially. Why was that?
Yeah, I think to the greatest extent because of injuries. But when he was out, he got out of shape, and he was overweight. It took him longer than it should have to get back. And to be honest with you, I was disappointed in O.J. He had some games that say, okay, that's why they signed him for 3 years. He can hit the J. He's a scorer. He can be a difference maker to some degree. And yet he wasn't on the court enough. And, you know, I just think that to me was a signing that just didn't work out, as sometimes has been the case. Now, I believe he has a couple of years left on the contract, so it'll be interesting to see what they do going forward. But I don't see O.J. Mayo as being part of the future of this team.
Well, he certainly has a lot of work to do this summer, and as you said, he was brought in to be a scorer, and that was something that he was not able to do consistently, as you reflect back on last season. So I would say one of the bright spots, though, for the Milwaukee Bucks was Brandon Knight. I mean, he improved in a number of categories. Talk about him.
Absolutely. He's young. He's a character guy. He plays hard. And I think he made progress in learning to play the point position. As you're aware, Big E, his body is kind of a two body.
True.
And he's
mm-hmm.
got somewhat of that shooter's mentality. Not to make a comparison, but at least in terms of that, like Monte Ellis there in Dallas, who is so gifted he could play that point. And I understand he did a lot more of that for your Mavs of Rick Carlisle last season, and no one would know that better than you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think his upside is huge. Now, let's just say as we're talking, let's just say I don't know if Cleveland's going to trade the pick or not, so they can maybe set up for the return of LeBron. I mean, there are all kinds of things out there. But let's just say this Dante Exum, the kid from Australia, 18 years old at 6'6", who's a point guard. Let's say they go that way. And again, it's totally hypothetical. Maybe they move Brandon Knight over to the two. But I think Knight has a future, whether the one or the two. I think he is one of those building blocks, one of the cornerstones they can work with. So I'm very excited about him. He became a very consistent scorer, and he started to dish the ball more as well. There were those games when it was like, 22 points and 2 assists. I mean, that's got to change. But he's still a young kid, as you know. He's another one of those. Wasn't he a one and done when he played at Kentucky? So it's going to take some time for anybody who comes in. But there are some great possibilities, and you know they're going to get, whether it's Jabari Parker, maybe even Joel Embiid, they're going to get a good player and somebody they can move forward with.
You know, you talk about the hypotheticals, perhaps even the international flavor that may come and arrive with the Milwaukee Bucks. But what about your rookie from Greece? He had a lot of raw talent, but were you encouraged with what you saw from him?
Very much so. Giannis had to play a lot more Antetokounmpo than they wanted him to. But he actually grew during the season, Biggie.
Is that possible? Wow.
He started at 6'8.5", 6'9", and he grew to over 6'10". So this kid has a lot of charisma. He is just great for the city, great for the franchise. They tell the story about the day he was running late for shoot around. Something happened. He was walking, and somebody picked him up and took him there, and he offered to pay him money. He insisted on paying money. Just that kind of a young man, that infectious youth that you love, and bringing in that new blood. Now, he was very inconsistent at times in a long NBA season and competition he'd never had the likes of before, not even close. But I think, by and large, sometimes he was a stat stuffer. He'd get you 10 points, 8 boards, 4 blocks, 6 assists. He's a terrific all-around talent, and again, it may take him a little longer than it would, say, one of these draft choices coming in. He might be a 3 to 5 year project, but I think he has the potential to be a multi-time all-star. He's that good, and he's earned the respect of lots of people he's played D against, including the aforementioned Kevin Durant of the Thunder.
So just talk to us, just your overall assessment of head coach Larry Drew, the job that he did. I know that there was a lot of injuries this year, but in terms of the leadership, the direction with the team.
Big E, I think he did a great job in holding it together, and he handled a very difficult time with grace. And I've said that publicly, I've said it privately. I know there's criticism when you lead a team that wins a franchise low in history, 17 games, but I think it could have been far worse. People could have defected left and right, some of the veterans versus the young people. And we talked about OJ and then again all those injuries. It could have gone south. I think for the most part he kept the locker room together, and for the most part they gave him great effort. And I don't care if you had Red Auerbach in his prime, Phil Jackson, you name it. They probably weren't going to win many more games than that under the circumstances. So I think he definitely deserves another year, and he's a terrific guy. Who really, I think, knows how to relate to his players, cares for his players. The bottom line is always, whether it's money to get a facility built or wins on the court. But I think he deserves another chance, and I give him good grades under the circumstance.
Okay, Tom Pippins from Fox 6 Television, the sports director there in Milwaukee, has been with us. We are flat out of time. I'd love to be talking about your Brewers, but we will just do that on our next Divine appointment. Okay, Tommy?
Take care, pal.
Thank you. Much more straight ahead at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter, @ERadioSports. We will.